determine what the future will bring, and I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have it this evening, Mr. Jeffrey Smith, and we're going to be talking about genetic engineering and the impact it is having on your health and the health of the people in this country. Jeffrey, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Thank you.
Well, now, of course, you've written a couple of articles recently, fascinating, really going into the background, sort of the overview of what's really going on that the average American has no idea about. So why don't you sort of pick up the story and I'll be quiet for a while.
Well, what we've done in the most recent articles is just describe some of the recent discoveries of genetically engineered foods and why they're not safe for human health, not safe for the environment, and never should have been approved. They were approved basically for political will and industry manipulation, not basic science. One of the most recent studies came out of Russia, where they took soybeans that were genetically engineered not to die when sprayed with herbicide, and they fed them to female rats. And then the rats got pregnant and gave birth, and they continued to take this genetically engineered soybean as part of their diet. And 56% of the offspring died within 3 weeks, compared to only 9% of the offspring of rats that were fed not genetically engineered soy. Now, it was a small study. It was preliminary. It's been published in a peer-reviewed journal, but it has an astounding possibility that the possibility that genetically engineered foods might cause dramatic health problems or mortality among infants. Now, what was interesting about the study is, after it was repeated by the leading scientist at the Russian Academy of Sciences 3 times in small numbers, the institute started getting different rat chow for their rat experiments, and this new rat chow used genetically engineered soybeans, unlike the ones that they had been getting before. So she couldn't do the experiment anymore because she didn't have adequate controls, because the control group was usually what eats the rat chow alone. But then she had an idea. What if this new rat chow that has genetically modified soybeans is causing high mortality among the offspring of these other experiments going on? So she started asking her colleagues, are you seeing high mortality? And yes, they were, just soon after they started using the genetically modified soy-based rat chow. So I have presented this information to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. At their annual conference, the board immediately requested the National Institutes of Health to repeat the study. No one has repeated the study yet, so we're actually raising money to repeat it ourselves, because if this gets verified, it's a shortcut to end the genetic engineering of the food supply. Certainly, if something is that dangerous, it's not something that should be out.
And, of course, the tragedy is that the average American is not hearing this. I was reading some statistics the other day where the incidence of neonatal death here in America is about 3 times as high, among newborns as it is in Japan. Why would that be?
Well, we don't know. It's obviously too preliminary to link it to genetically engineered foods, but it certainly can be a possible consequence of eating these experimental dangerous foods.
And I totally agree with you. We will not know until we do the studies. But, of course, it appears that the NIH isn't too interested in doing this study. We'll be right back here in just a couple of minutes with Jeffrey Smith as we begin to explore what these genetically engineered foods are really doing to you and your family. Well, Jeffrey, why don't you pick up the story there? Anyway, the NIH did not jump at the chance to repeat the study because they certainly would have the funds to do it.
Well, unfortunately, this is the typical response to adverse reactions from genetically engineered foods. Nothing. No response, no money made available. The major countries that do funding research, the United States is pro-GMO, the UK is pro-GMO. When the UK funded research on genetically modified foods back in the late 1990s, they were expecting it to have a glowing report. they were not expecting to find that the rats that ate a genetically modified potato developed potentially precancerous cell growth in their digestive tract, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, and damaged immune system. When the scientist went public with his concerns, allegedly two phone calls were placed from the Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director of this prestigious institute, and the next morning the scientist was fired after 35 years, silenced with threats of a lawsuit, and the data was withheld and the research was terminated. Now, we see currently a number of adverse reactions that are not getting follow-up. In India, where Monsanto has made a huge bid to try and promote its genetically modified cotton, it turns out the cotton has been a disaster for many farmers, and it's prompted thousands of suicides among farmers that have lost everything. But it also has been the subject of a few medical reports. A recent one found that individuals who handle this genetically modified cotton, and it's genetically engineered to produce its own pesticide, when farm workers handle it, many of them are developing allergic reactions on the skin or the upper respiratory system. And those in work in the area that clean the cotton and they're exposed to it, when the genetically modified cotton comes in, then they have to have allergy pills every day in order to continue to work. Now, there was another report, and this also needs to be followed up. There's a claim that there was dozens and dozens of sheep herds that were let loose in the cotton fields to graze on the crops after harvest, and about 25% of the sheep died within about a week of eating the genetically modified cotton plants. Now, this, of course, it's preliminary information. It just came out about 2 weeks ago, but it's another example of things that might happen with genetically modified crops, and it also is very similar to what we found in the Philippines, where reports were that animals that ate genetically modified corn engineered to produce a pesticide with the same new gene insert, that they too died mysteriously. And it also
hold that thought right there, please. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jeffrey was just saying that over in India, why the genetically modified cotton has been a disaster. Many of the farmers there have lost everything. Many of them have committed suicide because, you know, they've lost everything by planting this genetically modified cotton. The people who work in the fields have problems. The people who handle the cotton have problems. There have been reports, although they're preliminary, that sheep herds, when they've been turned loose to feed on the cotton plant, after the cotton's been harvested, a significant number of the sheep are dying. So why did so many farmers over there commit suicide? In other words, what happened to their crops?
Well, the yield of the genetically modified cotton, especially in the fields that didn't have irrigation, turned out to be a disaster. There was a lot of problems. Some plants didn't have any cotton bolls at all or had very few. It was small bowls and harder to pick, so they required more labor. Some people said that the soil in the field after the BT cotton was planted was unable to support other crops and was sterile. The cotton was also susceptible to certain pests that other cotton was not. The staple or the actual cotton that was picked was not as high a quality as the normal cotton. The length of the staple was shorter. It was a duller color. It was also not as heavy, so they got less money for it. There was a whole long list. In fact, in a GMO trilogy, which is a set of two discs, two DVDs and a CD, which I sell, I include a 30-minute videotape of cotton farmers in India that were shot by women farmers over 3 years that describe over and over again the problems that these farmers had with the BT cotton. And so if they've taken all their savings or even borrowed money to plant BT cotton and to borrow money for the pesticides and then end up with a disaster, there's no safety net there. They don't have a social security system like we do, and many, many thousands, in fact, have committed suicide as a result of failed cotton crops that were genetically engineered.
Jeffrey, if that has really gone over, happened in India with thousands of farmers who committed suicide, why don't we ever hear about that in the United States?
Well, in the United States, the whole issue of genetically modified crops has largely been covered up. I report that in detail in my book, Seeds of Deception, in a chapter called Muscling the Media. And I just happened to interview recently someone that I also interviewed for the book, Jane Akre, who was a CNN anchorwoman and then later worked for a Fox TV station in Florida. And she was going to blow the whistle on Monsanto's recombinant bovine growth hormone, which is injected into cows to increase milk supply. It's genetically engineered. And her five-part news series was going to link it, among other things, to cancer. And 3 days before the show was to air, a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorney stopped it, followed by a second letter that promised dire consequences to Rupert Murdoch and Fox TV if the station ran the five-part series. Well, she and her husband, who also worked for the station, who is an award-winning investigative reporter, claim that they were offered hush money to go away and never talk about it. They refused, and so they were led over 8 months in a series of 83 rewrites of the script. Each time the lawyer for Fox reviewed it and said it was still too controversial and they had to water it down. Finally, they refused to do an outright lie on television, were fired from their job. They sued Fox. A jury awarded Jane $425,000, saying that she was fired because she threatened to tell the fact that Fox was going to break the law and lie on television. But Fox actually appealed and won because it turns out, from a technicality, it's not actually illegal for them to lie on television. And so Jane was not covered by whistleblower laws, and they had to end up paying $150,000 of Fox's legal fees. So it turned out to be a bad thing for the reporters and a bad thing for the public, because that show never aired the way it was supposed to and the truth was never brought out. And this is not entirely untypical. There was examples that I point out all along of threats that were made from attorneys by Monsanto, publishers that canceled books, printers that actually shredded 15,000 issues of a magazine for fear of being sued by Monsanto, who is a big biotech company, and also pressure that was applied to the New York Times, USA Today, and other places in an attempt to limit the coverage of adverse findings on genetically modified foods.
And, of course, this is really rather frightening. If this is an example, and I do not for 1 minute question what you're saying, for our listeners out there, you have to understand this is the freedom of the press that we have in America today. And, you know, this really is criminal activity on the part of Monsanto, but who's going to challenge them? They can buy and sell, I'm sure, people within the legal system, just like they buy and sell politicians. And, of course, who has the millions and countless millions of dollars to challenge them? But the question is, how much harm is being done to the average individual? Now, when I first heard about the cotton, genetically modified cotton, I wasn't too concerned until I was reminded that they make cottonseed oil out of the cotton seeds that come from genetically modified crops. What happens to that cottonseed oil?
Well, the cottonseed oil is fed to human beings, and the cotton, the rest of the cotton seed is then put into animal feed, and so we get it indirectly through the milk of animals or the meat of animals. Likewise, canola, which is genetically engineered, is turned into canola oil as well as animal feed. And there's also soy and corn, which are also used both for animal feed and also directly in processed foods in large quantities. The soy and corn are, you know, turned into soy protein isolate and soy lecithin and high fructose corn syrup, etc. So we're exposed to genetically modified crops, chiefly soy, corn, cotton, and canola, in the majority of processed foods and certainly in vegetable oils, because all four of those are used for vegetable oil. And there has been, the United States, by the way, does not require any safety studies. The FDA does not require any safety studies on genetically modified crops. And you mentioned buying off politicians. Well, here's a very interesting fact, that when the FDA was supposed to create their policy on genetically modified foods, they were told by the White House to promote the biotechnology industry. And so they created a new position, the deputy director in charge of policy, and gave that position to Monsanto's former attorney. And that attorney created a policy in which the FDA says that if Monsanto and others say that their foods are safe, the FDA has no further questions. Years after that policy was created, documents were made public from a lawsuit which showed that it actually was based on deception. The policy claimed that the agency was not aware of any information showing that the foods were different in any meaningful or uniform way, and that's a quote, and yet the documents that were made public showed that the overwhelming consensus among the scientists at the FDA was that the foods were different and could lead to allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems, and they had urged their superiors to require long-term safety studies, but were ignored by Monsanto's former attorney.
So we've got a real problem here in America, and my understanding is that over in Europe, that they really don't want to use these genetically modified foods. The people there understand the potential for harm, and here in the United States, the average American isn't even allowed to understand what's going on. What's happening in Europe? Have the Europeans been able to keep out these genetically modified harmful foods from their diet?
Fortunately, they have been, and that's because the press has been open in reporting the issue. Scientist studies over there and over here show that the more people learn about genetically modified crops, the less they trust it. And so an open and skeptical press reported the health dangers, reported the risks to the environment. That raised a lot of concern among consumers, and the groups that responded to the concern were the food manufacturers. In April of 1999, Britain's largest food manufacturer, Unilever, committed publicly to remove all genetically modified ingredients from their European brands. Within a week, so did virtually every major food manufacturer in Europe, including Burger King and McDonald's and Nestle's. And these same companies continue to feed genetically modified foods to the U.S., where 60% of Americans say they've never eaten a genetically modified food in their lives, even though they eat them in virtually every meal. So the big difference between Europe and the United States in terms of the attitude is based on education. And so that's why I've launched the Institute for Responsible Technology. It's why I have the book Seeds of Deception. It's why I have the video Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals. I have a free monthly newsletter at seedsofdeception.com. I'm basically on a mission to create increased awareness about the risks of genetically engineered foods in the United States, so that a significant enough percentage of consumers, even maybe 5% of consumers, say we don't want to eat them, so that will inspire the same kind of mass retreat by the food manufacturers in the United States that we saw in Europe.
Well, I think it's very interesting. Within the last 2 weeks, a report came out. Now, we can't say it has anything to do with genetically modified food, but comparing the health of those who are 45 to 60 males, a large group in the United States, comparing them with Great Britain, we had twice the incidence of heart disease, twice the incidence of diabetes, a significantly increase in hypertension and other diseases, and comparable groups that smoked. In fact, the only difference was the British drank a lot more beer and ale than we do. But they said, gee, we just can't figure out why the Americans are so much sicker. We will never know unless somebody does a controlled study. And of course, as long as Monsanto has their people planted in government, nothing is going to change. Well, when we get back from this break, we'll want to have Jeffrey put his website out there and let you know how you can get in touch with him. We do carry his book, Seeds of Deception, but the other items you're going to have to get from him. And you've got, ladies and gentlemen, have got to find out what's going on. Could this really be true? Could it really be that they're giving us things that are harmful, and that people at the highest levels of our government are overriding our own scientists and allowing things that are definitely harmful to the American people to be widely used in our food? Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening, Jeffrey Smith, his book, Seeds of Deception. If you haven't read it, you really need to, because some of the stories he's telling you are listed there in great detail, and you need to know the background of this. And you say, well, if there's a problem, why, certainly Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity or all these good conservatives would tell us, and the question is, well, why don't they? Well, Jeffrey, wasn't there another study that was done where the people over in Europe were able to get the results from Monsanto, and they showed something about kidney lesions and basophilia? Yes. What was that about?
Well, typically, the studies that are done for safety by the manufacturers are done in secret. Although the United States Food and Drug Administration doesn't require any submitting any studies, the companies voluntarily submit summary data, which is often very superficial, and studies that are rigged to avoid finding problems. They're only a slightly more alert to requirements in Europe, and even though the studies that are submitted to the European authorities have remained secret. But Greenpeace challenged that last year, and the German court agreed that a study which had been very controversial because the reviewers of the study, many of them were aghast at the results that these poor rats had when fed genetically modified corn, the German court ordered the study to be made public. And what it showed was that rats that were fed genetically modified corn had serious problems in their physiology. Rather than go into the details of the physiology, I could tell you that the problems might have, in terms of the blood cells, in terms of the inflammation of the kidneys and the lesions on the kidneys and livers, might have been associated with allergic reactions or anemia or infections or diseases like cancer or blood pressure problems. And these things, any physiologist, any animal study expert would have demanded a follow-up to see what these problems were, how they came about, and why they were related specifically to the eating of genetically modified corn.
Because, of course, he would have had control groups, one group that ate the genetically modified corn and the other group that didn't, and it was only in the one group that they had the problem?
Exactly. But the thing is, there was a statistically significant difference between the rats that ate the GM corn and those that ate the corn that was similar genetics but just didn't have the new gene inserted. But the way Monsanto was able to try and wiggle out of this problem was just a disaster. They introduced all sorts of new irrelevant control groups and then compared the results of the rats that ate the GM product to all these irrelevant control groups and these irrelevant databases of information, things that are never done in animal feeding studies. They also made completely bogus claims like, well, because the results were different in the females compared to the males, it must not be biologically significant. And their techniques for defending the safety were criticized sharply by some of the world's experts in animal feeding studies, saying that there is no possible way that there was no biological significant effect in these animals, that they were responding in a way like toxic response, similar to what animals have when they're in the presence of pesticides or herbicides. And it turns out that this corn was engineered to produce its own pesticide. Now, the authorities claim...
Hold that thought right there, Jeffrey. Yeah. We're going to bring our stations back on board right about now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Jeffrey Smith. His book is Seeds of Deception. But, Jeffrey, would you like to tell our listeners how they could get in touch with you and get your other material? And how do they get your website?
Sure. You go to seedsofdeception.com, and if you look at the right-hand side, you'll notice I'm introducing a new product called the GMO Trilogy. GMO is for genetically modified organisms. And thanks to the sponsorship of some excellent natural food companies, it's available at a low price. In fact, if you click on that, you can actually download a piece of paper and bring it to a health food store and show it to them and ask them to offer it, because it's sold through the big distributor to health food stores. That way we can get it into the health food stores and make it available as an impulse buying item, because it's very inexpensive. Stores can sell as low as about $10. And that way, and it's two DVDs and a CD. It's an award-winning documentary from Europe, a beautiful film about genetically modified crops and the hazards. It's got a DVD that I created called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, and an audio CD, which you are welcome to make copies of and distribute on your own, the audio CD. Now, I also have a free monthly column called Spilling the Beans, which you can sign up for also at seedsofdeception.com. And if you're interested in Seeds of Deception, which is the book, then I recommend getting that on Radio Liberty website to support this type of programming, which gives the story behind the story, which is not available on the mainstream press.
All right, fine. Well, and is there a telephone number, or just mainly go to your website?
Yes, the telephone number for orders only is 888-717-7000, 888-717-7000.
All right, fine. And so, certainly, it's unfortunate, but most Americans refuse to believe that anything could be happening of this magnitude, and it wouldn't be covered by Time magazine or Newsweek magazine or U.S. News, or we certainly wouldn't be hearing about it on ABC, CBS, NBC. And I think there's a reason why we're not hearing about it. And yet, of course, we're talking about something that can produce very serious health effects. Now, certainly there's been other problems. This was what you call the BT corn that you were just speaking of.
Yes.
All right. Now, what about the milk that is produced by the injection of this recombinant hormone into the cows?
Well, I was just in D.C. last week, and I was interviewing an FDA whistleblower. Now, this man was a veterinary scientist who was reviewing the application by Monsanto for their bovine growth hormone, and he explained how the company apparently cooked the books, so to speak, in the scientific research and did not supply adequate data, and the data that they did supply was quite questionable. And he was asking for more information, and he was fired from his job and then harassed by other government agencies. And this, unfortunately, is not an isolated event. The remaining whistleblowers at the agency had to write an anonymous letter to Congress claiming that there was fraud and conflict of interest within the FDA and that some of the people involved in reviewing Monsanto's product were former Monsanto scientists. Now, the problem with milk from cows treated with RBGH, there's a lot of problems. There's excess of pus. There's typically more antibiotics. There's more bovine growth hormone in the milk. But the problem that is of most concern is a hormone called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1. Now, milk contains IGF-1 normally. We contain an identical IGF-1 in our system. Milk drinkers increase their levels of IGF-1. Now, people, premenopausal women with high levels of IGF-1, are 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer. Men are 4 times more likely to develop prostate cancer. IGF-1 is implicated in lung and colon cancer, and it's in significantly higher levels in milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone. And that's on the shelf. Now, if you go to seedsofdeception.com and you go to the section Buying Non-GMO, you can click on a site that actually lists the dairies that don't use RBGH. And you can also buy organic, because organic does not allow for the use of RBGH in the cows that produce the milk. So I would strongly recommend that people avoid eating dairy products and certainly not bringing them home so bring it to your kids, the animal products that are from animals that have been injected.
And, of course, the thing is that with a 7-fold increase in breast cancer and a 4-fold increase in prostate cancer, and 1 in every 3 American men having prostate cancer, you know, in large series, you know, well, nobody's asking, why are these things happening? Why is the incidence of breast cancer going up? Why do so many men have prostate cancer? Well, here is a possible answer, at least a contributing factor. And where are the people, the health experts from ABC, CBS, and NBC? They always have those health experts there to tell you not to take vitamins because they're going to kill you, or herbs or that sort of thing. Why don't they tell us about the danger of this recombinant growth hormone milk? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jeffrey Smith. We're talking really about the danger of genetic engineering. And, of course, the average individual when they hear this the first time, they say, that really couldn't be true. What sort of response do you get from people, Jeffrey, who have never heard this before, and you start talking about the danger of the food that we're eating all across America?
Well, what I do is I never just describe the health dangers. We've only touched on the surface. There's a lot of other serious problems that are associated with genetically modified crops. But I never give the story without also indicating how the biotech industries have hijacked regulatory agencies, as well as caused many of the news sources not to cover it. Because then people realize that they don't have the simple excuse that the FDA is protecting them. Because in this case, the FDA is certainly complicit. They're actually charged officially with the role of promoting the biotechnology companies. And if you look at what the politicians have said about the influence, for example, Dan Glickman, former Secretary of Agriculture, that tried to push genetically modified crops onto Europe, he admitted in a candid moment before stepping down at the end of the Clinton administration, he said, what I saw generically from the probiotic side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and feed the hungry and clothe the naked, and if you're against it, you're Luddites, you're stupid, and that frankly was the side our government was on. He said you felt like you were an alien, disloyal, by trying to present an open-minded view. So this particular tactic by the biotech industry to create a sense that it was immoral or disloyal to present an open-minded view is what we have to deal with in the United States, because people buy into the complete PR spin that this stuff is important to feed the world, and it's not. It actually works against feeding the world. It's actually dangerous, and it actually reduces yields, and it gives the impression that it's the magic bullet, and it takes the attention and money away from really successful programs to feed the world. People think that it actually is good for the environment, and yet it increases the use of agricultural chemicals. People think that it's been proven safe, and actually it's been proven to be inherently unsafe by the overwhelming evidence now that I'm compiling in my next book with a number of scientists from around the world. So what we're facing, of course, is a PR spin machine that's been fueled by hundreds of millions of dollars in the United States to promote this. And so people, when they find out the truth, they get actually quite upset, and they realize that they have to start protecting themselves because they're not going to get that protection from the United States government.
And because that's one of the themes that we use, your health is your business. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jeffrey Smith. And certainly, if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, you were mentioned that there were a great many other things that we should be concerned about. So why don't you just simply talk about some of them?
All right. One of the things that people get particularly shocked at is the possibility that genes could transfer from food into our gut bacteria DNA or into possibly our own DNA inside our internal organs. Now, the big concern came about the fact that most genetically modified crops contain a gene that causes the crop to resist death by antibiotics, a particular antibiotic. And when this was presented to the FDA, the division director and the whole division wrote a memo saying that this would be a serious health hazard to introduce this into the flora of the intestinal flora of the general population, because they were concerned that this antibiotic-resistant marker gene in genetically modified crops could transfer into bacteria inside our gut, into pathogenic bacteria, and end up creating diseases that would be untreatable by antibiotics.
In other words, basically, you're putting in a gene that resists antibiotics. If it got into the bacteria, then those bacteria would resist antibiotic treatment.
Precisely. Now, even though the FDA scientists had expressed concern, the American Medical Association expressed concern, the British Medical Association said that the crop should be banned for this reason, the biotech industry claimed that, it doesn't matter because the genes are all destroyed during digestion, the transfer will never occur, and so you're safe. Well, it turns out we're not safe. The genes are not destroyed during digestion. Studies now show that it clearly can survive in very large quantities, and that gene transfer has occurred and can take place in animals and human beings. In fact, the only human feeding study ever conducted on genetically modified crops showed that the fragments of the genes that were inserted into soybeans transferred into the gut bacteria of human beings. Now, this means that not only might we be creating antibiotic-resistant diseases, but consider the corn that creates its own pesticide because of a gene that's been inserted into the soy. If that same gene were to take up residence in the DNA of our gut bacteria, it's turning our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories. Now, we don't know if that'll last forever. We don't know if it'll grow over time. And we don't know how to identify it, let alone fix it. But that's the way in which eating genetically modified crops might affect our health for the long term, even after we stop eating them when we realize how particularly dangerous they are.
Well, go ahead.
That's just one of several. You asked for a list. I can give you here's another example. As reports all over North America describe that when given a choice between genetically modified or not genetically modified crops, animals such as pigs and cows and geese and elk and deer and raccoons and mice and rats have chosen the non-genetically modified crops. Well, these rats were force-fed this tomato. Several developed stomach lesions. 7 out of 40 died within 2 weeks. And the tomato was approved by the FDA over the objections and questions by their scientists. And unfortunately, the tomato has been taken off the market. There are no more genetically modified tomatoes for sale, but there are genetically modified Hawaiian papaya and also a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash, and as I mentioned, the soy, corn, cotton, and canola.
All right, we've got Candy calling from Tennessee. Hi, Candy. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, sir, I do. I'm going to order that book from Radio Liberty, by the way, Dr. Smith. And I'm concerned, when you go to the grocery store, will it have a label saying that this is genetically modified, or should we go to farmers markets and buy our food from now on? How do we know which foods to eat and which foods not to eat?
Well, it's an excellent question. It's the most common question I get around the country and around the world. Candy, what you can do is, in Chapter 8 of the book, it's called How to Change Your Diet, and it gives a complete description. Unfortunately, because the Food and Drug Administration is designed to promote the biotechnology industry, they have refused to require labeling, even though 92% of Americans want genetically modified crops labeled. So, in a nutshell, what you can find in that book is the following. Either you have to buy organic products, or you buy products that say specifically non-GMO, or you have to read the labels and avoid those ingredients which are made from crops that have been genetically modified. Because 86% of the soybeans in the United States have been genetically modified, so if it doesn't say organic or non-GMO, if it has soybean oil or soy protein isolate or soy lecithin, you know it's from a mixture of GM and non-GM soy. The same with the corn derivatives, the same with canola oil and cottonseed oil. And so I explain also how to buy non-GMO in restaurants, because most of the produce that's out there is not genetically engineered. The only produce that you can buy, the only vegetables that you can buy, are some sweet corn, a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash, as well as some Hawaiian papaya. But all of the other produce is not genetically engineered yet. There are laboratory versions of them that are waiting to be introduced, and hopefully we can stop that. But in the meantime, most foods that are fresh foods are not genetically engineered.
Does that answer your question, Candy?
All right, and can you tell by looking at these foods? I mean, what actually does it do to the foods so you can tell by looking at them if they are genetically engineered?
Well, you really can't tell them because you're dealing with the oils, the sunflower oil, the canola oil, the cottonseed oil, the corn oil, and, of course, the corn products. I'll tell you one thing is that the corn has changed. You know, we always used to have, caterpillars. There's evidence of caterpillars in the corn. You look at those ears of corn today, they're just pristine. And one reason a lot of them are is because they actually produce a pesticide that kills the caterpillar. Would that be true, Jeffrey?
Yes. In fact, about 20% of the genetically modified crops are designed to produce their own pesticide. About 80% are designed to withstand applications of herbicides so that you can spray, for example, the soybean plant, and the plant won't die because it's genetically engineered. You won't be able to tell the difference by looking at it, because there are no, there's no nutritional improvements, there's no improvements in appearance, there's no improvements in shelf life. It's simply for the benefit of farmers, for weed control that takes less time, or that produces its own pesticide, which of course we eat when we eat the corn, or the cottonseed oil perhaps. So you won't be able to tell the difference by looking at it, and you won't be able to read it on the label if it is genetically engineered.
And, dear Candy, we need to have all these things labeled, but they're not going to do it because they don't want to protect our health.
Hey, there was a bill just introduced into the Senate last week asking for labeling, and if you'd like to contact your congressman to encourage them to support that bill, you can go to thecampaign.org, thecampaign.org, and learn all about these bills that were just introduced.
Candy, help us get this information out, will you?
I certainly will, but I'm going to order your book. I don't have a computer, and it's like my hands are tied. I don't even know how to use a computer, and
I just work
every day, but I am going to get the word out about this. I'm going to order your book from Radio Free Liberty. And, Dr. Stan, I listen to your program every night coming home from work. It won't pick up back in the mountains where I live, but I listen to it, and I want to get a shortwave, I went and bought a shortwave, in fact, but I couldn't pick up the station, so I took the shortwave back to Circuit City. But anyway, I will talk to you later because I don't want to take up time on your radio, but just I appreciate you very much.
God bless you. Thanks so very much. Well, let's go to Laverne calling from Spokane, and Barbara is next. Laverne, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes. Since the GMO food comes from genetically a gene pool, what effect, if they use human or animal genes in food, is that going to bridge the bird flu? I mean, make it easier for it to jump to humans from animal?
But I think that this has nothing to do really with bird flu. It just has to do with the fact that, well, I'll certainly Jeffrey answer that, but they're doing all sorts of crazy things. They are using specific markers to actually promote the genes getting into these crops. But pick up the story there, please, Jeffrey.
Well, there has been no research that links a particular animal disease with genetically modified crops, but there are theoretical ways in which the crops could either damage the immune system of animals, making it easier for them to have infections by viruses, and it's even possible, theoretically, that the viral genes that are put into the DNA might transfer into the virus, let's say, might cause an increase in viruses, in other types of viruses, or susceptibility to viruses in human beings or animals. These are theoretical things which I'm covering in my next book. They're very technical. I certainly wouldn't say that the bird flu is connected, but I can't say that it's not. I just say that there's some theoretical evidence which has not been tested, which adds to a long list of reasons why these foods should never have been approved.
Amen to that. Anything else, Laverne?
Yes. I hear that McDonald's has bought a 1,000,000 acres to plant genetically altered crops. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not heard that. No.
Okay, thanks very much, Laverne. Let's go to Barbara calling. Hi, Barbara. Did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Just a quick comment. I was listening to Candy talking about, you know, how do you know whether these foods are safe or not? And one thing on prepackaged foods, don't let the warning "all natural" fool you. It is not necessarily safe. Because I have a son with, adult onset allergies, and we are very careful about what we can and can't buy that is prepackaged. And after reading one of these things, the only two ingredients essentially were soy and spinach, and the only thing that we can think of, and he took quite a violent reaction to it, was the fact that the soy was probably altered in some way. It was a genetically altered soy.
Well, there's actually a lot of people that believe that genetically modified soy is an increased allergen. In fact, soon after genetically modified soy was introduced to the UK, soy allergies there skyrocketed by 50%. We don't have the same kind of monitoring here that they had in the UK, so we don't know if a similar thing happened here. We do know that genetically modified soy has an increase in a known allergen called trypsin inhibitor. In fact, in cooked soy, which is the form that most people get it in, it was, in one study, sevenfold increase in trypsin inhibitor in the genetically modified variety compared to the non-GM variety. There's also the fact that the gene that's put into the soybean has some sections on it that are identical to known allergens, and that the soybean would not have passed the World Health Organization's criteria, which is designed to minimize the likelihood that genetically modified crops will be allergens. And so there's a lot of us that believe that these genetically modified soy may have increased allergy characteristics. And I've also get reports from a lot of people that claim that they have results or reactions to normal soy, but not to organic non-GM soy.
Jeffrey, do they have then all of the genetically modified crops over in Great Britain?
Well, right now, this study was done back in 1999 when they were still serving genetically modified soybeans in the products there. But now they've largely been replaced. There's still some contamination in a small percentage, and it's usually less than 1%. So the exposure in Europe is a lot less than we have here.
All right. Barbara, did you have anything else you'd like to ask?
I would just urge people to eat more natural foods and stay away from the processed items, because you just really can't trust them.
And believe me, those canola oil is in just about everything. Okay, thanks very much
Thank
for calling.
You.
In fact, Jeffrey, I've heard that don't they use a lot of canola oil in the fast food industry?
Well, yes. In fact, especially in Canada, where canola is actually a designer oil, canola stands for Canadian oil, it was actually mutagenic, derived from oilseed rape, which was poisonous, but they exposed it to X-rays, changed the genetic structure, and made it so that it had less of the toxic acid that was deadly. However, they've also, on top of the mutagenic variety, they've now inserted genes that allow these canola to withstand applications of herbicide, and there's a lot of it being sold in the United States.
All right. My telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Maggie calling from Texas. Hi, Maggie. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan. I would like to ask the guest, did you include sunflowers among the genetically altered foods?
No, sunflowers are not genetically engineered and commercialized. There are genetically modified varieties of sunflower that are in the laboratory that may be being field tested, but so far sunflowers are not genetically engineered.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, anything else? I think I said something about that.
Yes,
and, of course, it's really primarily soy, canola, corn, and cotton. Those are the four.
Right. Okay, I got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling, Maggie. And certainly, you know, this is such a very, very real problem. We need to have all the details down. And certainly, you know, the oils, so many of the oils that are being used in the fast food industry are not good for us anyway. And then if they're genetically modified, it's sort of a double whammy.
Exactly.
All right, fine. Were there any other examples that we could give?
Well, yes. There's examples where animals, rats that ate genetically modified canola meal had livers that were 12 to 16% heavier. Mice that were fed genetically modified soybeans had misshapen nuclei in their liver cells. Mice fed genetically modified soy also had reduced pancreatic enzymes, which could interfere potentially with digestion. Twice the number of chickens died eating genetically modified corn compared to the non-GM corn. A farmer claims that 12 of his cows died when fed a variety of genetically modified corn. About 25 farmers claim that genetically modified corn varieties caused their pigs or cows to become sterile. There's also genetically modified peas that have not been introduced. In fact, they've been canceled because some advanced tests indicated that animals might have an immune response, meaning that humans might have an allergic response. The interesting thing about these peas was that the tests that they used to determine that these peas might create a potentially deadly allergy were the tests that were never done before on genetically modified crops. In fact, if the peas had been submitted normally, under normal conditions, they could have been approved.
Well, let's go to Michelle calling from Houston. Michelle, did you have a question?
I've noticed that tomatoes and potatoes, they just can sit around and they never show any sign of deterioration. Are they being genetically modified, or what's the...
There was a tomato that had been genetically modified for longer shelf life, but that was taken off the market.
What about the strawberries?
Strawberries have never been commercialized. They were only genetically engineered in field tests. And there was potatoes in the past, but they too have been taken off the market. So there's changes that occur from selective breeding, but it's not the same thing.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Okay, Michael, hang on for just a minute. Go ahead,
okay,
finish your answer.
Yes, the changes that we see in the produce are largely from selective breeding, where they'll take a tomato, for example, that gets picked easily by a machine and can be transported across the country or around the world, and so we may end up with a tomato that doesn't taste too good, and maybe it doesn't have particularly good nutrient qualities, but it's designed to work with industrial agriculture. That would not be genetically engineered. It's just selectively bred that way. If you had a tomato, for example, where they inserted a gene from an Arctic fish, and the Arctic fish can withstand freezing and cold temperatures, you could create a tomato that could withstand frost, and they actually have created those before, but they have never introduced those commercially because the protein that it was creating was bitter or tasted poor. But that's an example of crossing species. You can even take, there was even an attempt to take a spider gene and put it into a goat so that they could milk the goat to get spider web protein to create bulletproof vests. So this is the kind of way that they're acting like creators and making a mockery of the current species barriers.
Hey, thanks very much for calling, Mike.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye.
Keep it up.
Let's go to Bob calling from St. Louis. Bob, quick question.
Yeah, I was wondering, it seems like everything we talk about here on the radio is a defensive type of situation. Why, with all the lawyers in this Sioux country, this Sioux crazy country, why aren't they, number one, suing the FDA for putting these things out there? Like, you're aware, I'm sure, Doctor, that Rumsfeld and the aspartame, they're too, he should be tried for treason for doing that, trying to kill our country.
Well, I tell you
why aren't they sued, like Monsanto? They're the ones that put now, they got these Terminator seeds. I'm sure your guest knows about them.
No, let's get, Jeffrey's response. We've only got about a minute here. Thanks so much for your call.
Okay.
Why aren't some suits being brought here, Jeffrey?
Well, there are some suits going up. There's a suit about price fixing. It turns out the judge that knocked it down as a class action used to have Monsanto as his client. There was a lawsuit against the FDA, and it appears that the judge really had to do some manipulations and some administrative law to knock it down. And, you know, my evaluation was that they must have been on the side of Monsanto somehow. There's also lawsuits against Monsanto for contaminating the canola supply so that organic farmers cannot grow organic canola because there's no clean seeds. But by and large, there's been so few safety studies that have been done, and the ones that have been done have been rigged to avoid finding problems, that there's no smoking gun. So we're trying to raise some money to get some smoking gun studies done, which, forget about lawsuits, if we can find some of these things like the high mortality rate among the rats, we can end this dangerous experiment right away.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate you being with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest has been Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey, thank you so very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to getting on some of our other programs.
Thank you.
And once again, why don't you get your website out there so people will know how to get to you?
Sure, seedsofdeception.com, and you can click over from there to our other one, which is gmfreeschools.org, which is a program we're starting to take GM foods out of schools. And that should do it. Between that and also the toll-free number, which is 888-717-7000 for those that don't get on the web.
God bless. Thanks very much. Good night. All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do carry the book Seeds of Deception. We have a 4-tape set on genetically modified food, and we recommend what Jeffrey is doing. And I really somehow feel that God has called various people to be involved in specific issues. And certainly we have one woman who does nothing but fight the aspartame NutraSweet battle. That's Betty Martini. And we have other people who are trying to get the truth out about how they're destroying the minds of our children with fluoride, and others trying to get the truth out about how they're poisoning our children with thimerosal and mercury in the childhood vaccines, and now, of course, specifically left in the influenza vaccine so they can destroy the minds of six-month-old children. There really are evil and wicked people out there. But I think Jeffrey's been called to do what he's doing, and just as I feel it, and somehow I've been called to do what I'm doing. Anyway, I sort of wish somebody else had been called, but be that as it may, we're here, and we'll continue doing it as long as we can. So remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We carry Jeffrey Smith's books, Seeds of Deception, another one, GMOs, Beware, Genetically Modified Food. We have the 4-tape set on genetically modified food. And then, of course, we have so much information on water fluoridation. We have the wonderful book, The Fluoride Deception. We have 2 4-tape sets, several DVDs, certainly we have information on the mercury. We have 4-tape sets on aspartame. We have DVDs on both fluoride and aspartame. You need to get this information. You need to find out that they're poisoning your children and they're poisoning you. And you say, well, why would anybody want to do a thing like that? Maybe they just don't know what they're doing. Maybe it's all for money. Well, you really need to get my DVD. It's entitled Planned Population Reduction. Could anybody be intentionally wanting to reduce the population of the world? Well, you need to get, of course, some of the government reports we have. Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969 for the 1970 session. We asked for $10 million to create a new disease that can be used for mass killing. The National Security Study, Memorandum 200, that came out in 1974 over the name of Henry Kissinger, that talks about how we have to control the population of the world. And certainly you'll want to get my DVD, Plan Population Reduction. We have so much material. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, we ask you to remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And we do hope many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out trying to educate the American people and teach them how to preserve their health and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line one of my favorite guests, and her name is Carol Matriciana. And Carol is with the has her own film company, puts out some of the most wonderful videos, and of course she has a tremendous understanding of the spiritual battle that's going on today. She's put out videos on Harry Potter and on the occult movement in the America, and certainly on the New Age influence in America. But of course, this really, so much of this goes back to Hinduism. She was actually born and raised in India during the waning years of the British mandate there, British control. And of course, she herself got involved in the occult and tapped into the supernatural powers, and then, of course, eventually gave her life to the Lord. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan. It is always such a pleasure being with you. Thank you for inviting me to be your guest again.
Well, it's always nice to have you. And are you working on some new projects now?
Well, yes, I am. I think the last time I talked to you, I was on my way to India. And I filmed some very, very exciting interviews there. And basically, I'm working on sort of where has yoga gone since the movie that we made in the 80s, Gods of the New Age, which was one of the classics exposing the roots of yoga, what Hinduism, how Hinduism was being repackaged to the West. And how businesses, corporations, schools, universities across the country were practicing yoga, and so we looked at the roots of it. And so now, 2 decades later, where has yoga gone? Well, it is completely integrated into our society as mainstream becomes more pagan and paganism becomes mainstream. We see that corporations are across America embracing yoga. The business community is a growing awareness of this for corporate yoga boom goes into these companies. It's really amazing that companies are finding that yoga not only helps employees to be more productive, but it also creates a kinder, gentler workplaces is the slogan of corporations such as MTV Networks, NYNEX, IBM, AT&T, Nike, HBO, Forbes, Apple consulting companies. All of these corporations are now actually integrating yoga into for their employees. Fortune 500 companies, Wall Street brokerage houses, Chase Manhattan Bank, New York Roadrunners Club. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, now, what do they do? Do they just have special instruction in yoga, learning how to relax, how to meditate, or what?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yoga is being brought in to guide people out of their heads and into their hearts.
Well, of course, that's really a very, very dangerous thing to do, because, of course, you're opening up your mind. It's like the contemplative prayer that is coming into the churches today. But of course, it's the whole idea is to put your mind into neutral, and at that point where you have no thoughts at all,
altered state of consciousness. You're absolutely right.
And that, of course, is when you are opening yourself up to demonic ideas and to the demonic beings who truly are there, those beings from the other dimension who prowl the earth in search of the souls, the men. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. Carol, you know, this new movement, massive movement in China, has to do with sort of an exercise. They call it sort of a Christian exercise. What is that all about? This it's been outlawed in China. They have, of course, a lot of the people have come here to America. Is that in any way related to yoga?
What did you ask me, Dr.
Well, basically, there's a movement in communist China, and it has to do with exercise and breathing, and it's sort of swept across China. I don't know if you're acquainted with it, but now a lot of these people have come to the United States, and they sort of call it Christian exercise or something of that sort, but it looks to me like it's very much similar to these occult practices of India.
Well, I'm not sure about the Chinese one that you're talking about, but I certainly know, for instance, if... you know, we look at the end of last year, the Time cover, Time magazine did a story on stretching for Jesus, and they call it Christian yoga is gaining a devout following, upsetting purists, Hindus, and some Christians. And basically, the whole idea is that Christians can do yoga, and it's just called stretching exercises and breathing. And in different occult pagan backgrounds, and I'm sure in China it's the same sort of meditative, contemplative breathing, what you do is you concentrate, you close your eyes, you empty your mind, and you concentrate on your breath going in and out of your body. And this, of course, the scientific community, I mean, we've got universities across America that are studying yoga and saying that the research into yoga shows that you know, there's all these benefits, there's psychological benefits, and that yoga is now being used for drug recovery and insomnia and depression and all these sort of things. Well, of course it works. I mean, what people don't understand is that the occult works. There is power in occultism, and there is power in these supernatural the spirit world out there, you know, and they'll do anything to con us. But basically what they're doing is they're taking an exercise. For instance, yoga was designed in the Far East to prepare you for death. It's an exercise to prepare the body for reincarnation. It is to teach the body how to slow down its breathing, slow down its emotions, disassociate from the world, go introspective, become self-hypnotized or self-absorbed, so that you break away from the outside world, so that you can be prepared for the passage, your reincarnation passage. Well, how can a Christian possibly practice yoga?
Hold that thought right back there. And, of course, Carol was just saying that all of these things are really, you know, adopting the techniques of the East, and yoga is really a method in India to prepare yourself to die. And yet...
it's been repackaged here, right, Dr. Stan, as an exercise for life, to invigorate you, to help you be able to focus on becoming a better, more life-filled person. But this is just management. This is just marketing and repackaging very dangerous principles, spiritual principles. I mean, the very first commandment in Christendom is that we have to love the Lord our God with all our mind. Well, to give up your mind, to empty your mind, is breaking the first commandment. We cannot put our minds into neutral, because our minds were created in as their design mechanisms to help us think. I mean, they are designed to make us think, not go into neutral. So immediately there is a problem when you empty your mind, and then you sort of they tell you to visualize, to start becoming into a self-hypnotic trance, or to visualize something in your third eye area, so that you can focus and become more centered. All these are new words, to become centered, to go into yourself. Well, the Bible says that to go into ourselves, there's no good thing in us. So what is the point of going inside of ourselves to find good when we're told that our hearts are deceptively wicked, there's no good thing inside of us? We've got to get out of ourselves and go to Him who is good and holy, you know, in order to fill us up with His power and His goodness and His holiness. So the whole concept of yoga is completely the antithesis of Christianity. To market it as saying stretching for Jesus, and that Christians are doing yoga, and in fact in churches, in this Time magazine it showed that the platform was the altar, and that they put on this praise music and the practice is Christian yoga. Well, you cannot have Christian yoga, because every asana or posture in yoga is based on a posture connecting you with a force or a god or a demigod or a position. For instance, let's say some of the positions within yoga, there's the serpent. Well, my goodness, to position yourself as a serpent in order to gain some kind of power through your body movement, the serpent is always negative in the scriptures, and the serpent was the one that beguiled Eve. So why try and awaken your serpent energy within you in order to become more godlike or to have more life?
Is that what they call the kundalini energy?
Yes, that's the serpent power. The kundalini,
right,
is the serpent that is supposedly coiled at the base of your spine asleep, and in order to get into a meditative trance-like state or a higher consciousness or whatever it is, it's to awaken the serpent power laying coiled at the base of your spine, move it up through the chakras, up through your spine, supposedly. So ultimately it comes to the magical spot in between your eyes and your forehead, so that you can have enlightenment and become into a trance state where you can believe whatever you want to believe, through either hyperventilating, through either breathing deeply, through either putting yourself into an altered state. Whatever it is, it's an idea of being in a peaceful state, a stressless state. But it's a counterfeit peace. It's a peace. Whatever involves the serpent is always counterfeit. He is not a creator. He is a counterfeiter. He copies, a very poor copy of what Christ has designed. And Christ has died so that we can have life, so that we can have eternal life. So to practice yoga in order to know your reincarnation cycle and what you're going to move into in your next life, that isn't even based in scripture.
No, but it sells very, very well. People are always looking for something better. They don't want to simply take the studying the Word of God and understanding God's plan for us. They're looking for an experience. And
well, that's the thing. It is. You're absolutely right. It's an experience. And what the reason that I made the Harry Potter movies, which you referred to earlier on, was because here we have Harry Potter. We have the same awakening of serpent power now being taught to young children, because Harry Potter's motto over Harry Potter's school, Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, is about the sleeping dragon, and that one has to awaken the sleeping dragon. And of course Harry awakens these latent powers within him, and his power is aroused through the serpent, the evil Lord Voldemort. So here is the same idea of arousing serpent power, and in order for Harry to be able to do it well, he is told to concentrate. Well, when you go into yoga practice, you're told to focus in, center. It's another word for concentrate. It's all these, the new sort of language, but basically it's saying focus your mind, empty your mind, but focus yourself to your inside, concentrate or center on your internal goodness or experience, so that you can have a mystical sort of enlightenment, you know. And that's all of this is rooted in the New Age. It's all part of a counterfeit or an alternative message from the Bible, so that you can have a spiritual experience. And however, whatever way it's coming into the church, I mean, we see it. We're warned that in the last days there'd be an apostasy, and that we're all going to combine in this sort of ecumenical new thing that's taking place. And we see it in the church. I mean, it comes through, as you mentioned earlier, whether it's contemplative prayer, which, you know, the practitioners are put into this altered state of consciousness, which is the same sort of design of yoga. You've got Christian mantras where you have to repeat either the name of Jesus or a saint or a prayer. Well, a mantra is a repetitive prayer to put you into an altered state in yoga. It's a Hindu practice. We also have Christians that are walking the labyrinth, which is incredible that they go through this sort of maze, and where, again, it's designed to put you into an altered state of consciousness
and
to walk
that,
through this winding path.
And it's all this effort to put the Christian into the altered state of consciousness where their mind will be open for the spiritual invasion. That's really
exactly
what it's all about.
And then, of course, they've got this Christian Zen now. It's interesting that all these things that are pagan practices are being given, if you will, credibility or trying to be made authentic by being called Christian. So that Zen or yoga are now being called Christian Zen, Christian yoga. And yet, Christianity is being pushed down in a way. It's being told it's no good, and yet the pagan religions are using Christianity to give them a leg up, if you will. It is very peculiar.
Well, of course, it's like the Christian rock that we have, or a lot of the terribly vulgar music we have, but they put Christian before it, and the Christians, being totally undiscerning, flock to it because, after all, it's Christian rock, or
that's right,
a Christian rap, or call it what you will, but of course it doesn't make it Christian at all.
And then we've got the emergent church today where you've got sort of bigger and bigger churches that are, that's being called the Starbucks Christianity, which features all these, the sounds and the smell of incense and candles and music, and all of this is now going into churches lobbies are being darkened, there's stained glasses being put back to all give this mystical illusion so that we can have an experience, but we're not being taught the Bible. And then, of course, we've got so many Bible translations that are corrupting or polluting or diluting the Word of God. And, Christians are becoming absorbed into the apostasy and not realizing that they are being weakened, losing their discernment.
Well, you know, we're told that in the latter days, before the man of sin is exposed, why there'll be a great falling away from the faith. And as I look and see what's going on today, I have a feeling there is a terrible falling away.
You're absolutely right. And when I went to India, where I started this off to go back to India and to interview yoga teachers there and to try and get to the root of what yoga is, and could there possibly be anything such as Christian yoga? Well, of course, they won't. They say no, there can't be anything as Christian yoga. That it's an oxymoron.
So they recognize, of course, that yoga is yoga. And do they recognize where the power in yoga comes from? Do they recognize the demonic forces there?
Well, they don't call it demonic, Dr. Stan, but they do call it serpent power.
I think that anybody should be a little suspicious when you begin talking about serpent power.
But you see, they consider the serpent as a very powerful and a wonderful god. I mean, the serpent is wound around the head of one of their most prestigious gods, Shiva. And in my movie, Gods of the New Age, if you remember, the serpent is continually around so many gods. In fact, when I went back to India a few months ago, I went through all the various temples and filmed the various gods, and there is the serpent coiled through their hair or round their neck. And it's only in the Bible that the serpent is always called the enemy of God, but in other religions it is lifted up as a power to plug into.
Well, of course, the difficulty is that all the other religions, in my estimation, are false religions, and they all really have their basis, their power, in the serpent. And this should be so obvious to Christians, but I don't think most Christians are smart enough to, or at least they've never been told. And certainly practicing medicine, the symbol of the medicine was, you know, the caduceus. What was it? It was two snakes coiled around a vertical pole. Actually, it was looking to the serpent power, the symbol of medicine that is still revered by many people today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. And, well, certainly, what is happening over in India today? We hear that there's tremendous, certainly, economic advantage, but is it still the same intense poverty that there was when you were there many years ago?
Oh, no. I was so shocked to go to the new Hyderabad. In the center of India, the city of Hyderabad, it's made up of 5,000 acres of a new city called High Tech City, which stands for Hyderabad Information Technology Engineering and Consulting. And this High Tech City now are the customer, they give a lot of the customer service, for instance, for your American companies like Dell, Google, Yahoo. All these are headquartered in Hyderabad, India. In fact, Microsoft, Bill Gates' Microsoft is headquartered in High Tech City. And, oh, it is just magnificent, huge, incredible modern buildings that would almost put Las Vegas to shame. And when you drive from Hyderabad Airport out to High Tech City, the infrastructure is so poor to take all these incredible electricity and cables and fiber optics and internet lines and electrical lines and telephone lines all out to High Tech City. They've actually strapped all the wiring to the street lamp, so you have about 15 feet of black lace up in the skies with all this heavy wiring for miles and miles to facilitate the high-tech city. And of course, I'm sure that many of your listeners, when they have go to customer service to some of the big stores in this country, they'll realize that they're being sent to India to get their customer service, which goes out to India. So India is becoming very, very wealthy by helping facilitate American corporations, European corporations, and be the customer service for a lot of corporations and companies.
Well, of course, India, of course, is you can get your law. If you want research for a lawsuit, you can get it done over there. You can get your architecture. Architects, very well-trained architects, will do it for a fraction of what they can get things done over here in the United States. They are really into almost everything and competing very effectively. They're very, very smart people. The real plan is to transfer industrial production and the wealth of the world to India, to China, to Russia, and to Brazil.
And China. And China and India are called the gateway, the pagodas to the east. China and India are working very, very closely. And it's amazing, because as they get wealthier, of course, they build up their nuclear stocks and are becoming certainly a huge force to contend.
Well,
it won't be long that we'll be in trouble, Dr.
Well,
Stan.
Of course, our leaders are doing everything they can to transfer our industries out of this country, rewarding the companies that take their other industries out of this country, guaranteeing them that if their country companies are nationalized, that they'll, we will pay anything that they lose. Our leaders have a different world vision. Because, of course, in my estimation, many of them worship a different god. We'll be right back with Carol Matriciana. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. And Carol, would you like to get your website out so people would know how to get in touch with your ministry?
Well, thank you. Yes, it's www, and then my first name, which is Carol, C-A-R-Y-L, TV, short for television, .com. Carol, C-A-R-Y-L, TV.com.
All right, fine. And, of course, Carol was just saying that really what's happened when she was in India, just a tremendous advance there, the scientific advance, the high-tech city that they have, where so many of the major American corporations are now operating over there. And actually, increasing prosperity of the people. Certainly, then did you see a lot more prosperity than when you lived there before?
Dr. Stan, it was a very peculiar sort of eerie situation, because on the one hand, you've got this incredible technology, amazing technology, where most Indians now have little cell phones, and they've got their personal cell phones with them. They've also got personal emails, so that when I came out at the airport, my porters and taxi drivers were asking me if they could email me. And, of course, they're very, very friendly people, are people that want to stay in touch with people all over the world. So, they know exactly how to go into Internet cafes, how to log on to computers. In fact, one of the funny sites I saw was with this sort of big, this huge black lace of wires that... because there isn't any infrastructure to take all this wiring out to high-tech city, which is many, many miles outside of Hyderabad, this 5,000 acres that houses all these corporations from the world, the wiring that runs out of them, the fiber optics, the internet lines, the telephone lines, the television cable lines, whatever all these, the wiring, actually... People living in sort of mud huts and little dwellings on the side of the road can just go up the lamppost and plug into the wiring to furnish their own electricity in their little mud huts, and to look after their own computers if need be, their little laptops in these areas. So it was very strange to see the sort of modern technical world on the one hand, cell phones and the use of technology rampant on the one hand, and yet on the other hand, you've still got altars along the side of the road. The cow is still considered a holy god. You'll see somebody catching the urine of a cow to drink the spiritual fluid so that they can be imbued with spiritual powers. And going up to a tree and worshipping a tree and putting turmeric or colored spices on the tree to give homage to the spirit gods of nature, or to have a photograph of one of the gods around the place and to be worshipping the phallic symbol, or putting this sort of white milky stuff over a phallic symbol of another god to worship him. So you sort of have this confusion of modern, huge modern technology, and yet a sort of very primitive culture that worships, 9 million gods?
9 million gods?
Yes. So it was very mind-boggling for me. It was actually a sort of quite unsettling in a way to be able to see people using high-definition little video cameras on the one hand, and yet eating in conditions where, I went to a restaurant and they're eating in these pot clays and paper plates that are almost ankle high, shin high, on this filthy sidewalk where the dogs are eating out of plates that have been discarded in this restaurant, and yet you've got people on cell phones next to this poverty and dirt and just filthy conditions, you know. And of course, beggars that still remain.
And they still have their untouchables over there, the untouchable class?
Yeah. Well, there's been lots of political changes to sort of work with the deletes and try and work with giving the untouchables a better status. But then you've got the Muslim-Hindu conflicts where, you know, there's the killing of Hindus and the killing of Muslims on a daily basis, Dr. Stan. I mean, the religious persecution is just huge.
Well, of course, we live in a make-believe world here. I really think that really is more the way it is in many parts of the world, and it well may be very similar to that here in the very near future. We'll be right back with Carol Matriciana. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carol had gone to India to really film the yogas, to actually put together a video on yoga. What is your ultimate impression as far as this? Were you more concerned with what was happening here in America, just using India as the backdrop, or were you interested in what's happening in India as far as the film is concerned?
Well, Dr. Stan, I made a film about 20 years ago called Gods of the New Age, which was to help America understand the roots of yoga, the roots of Hinduism. In those days, all the different gurus and godmen were coming and exploiting the Americans here. We had the Hare Krishnas in the streets, Maharishi Mahesh Yoga was offering his form of transcendental meditation. Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, famous for his 100 Rolls Royces, came into Oregon and took over so many acres there with his hundreds of believers and sannyasins, or devotees, as they called sannyasins, that went there to worship him. And in India, the concept is that when you do enough yoga, then you become enlightened and you become a God-man, and then you can pass on your knowledge of how to become the God that is basically seen to be within all of us, that we are all potential gods, that we then can break our reincarnation cycle and come back in a better state. So this is the basic belief of Hinduism, Eastern mysticism. And reincarnation is seen as a hopeless imprisonment that you just can't break out of, because you really don't know what you did in past lives, and really you're not guaranteed of what you're going to be able to become in future lives. So the whole idea of yoga is crucial to the human being who wants to better himself in his next life. And so with Gods of the New Age made 2 decades ago, I wanted to go back to India to see if yoga in India had changed, if they had adapted it for the Westerner, and really what has yoga become now in the West, and how has it cleaned itself up. And really the yoga purists, while they encourage people of all faiths to practice yoga, they hate it to be used as a Christian evangelizing tool. I mean, they see that yoga shouldn't sell anything to anyone, because it's a sort of prayer state. In fact,
hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carol was just saying that she went to India to see what the state of yoga is today, having certainly done a video 20 years ago called Gods of the New Age, still a classic in understanding the religion of India and how it came to the United States, masked as the New Age movement, and with all of the other things. And of course, she said that talking to the yogas over there, the practitioners of this art, do not want yoga to be Christian. They say it cannot be Christian because it's completely a different approach. So pick up the story there, Carol.
Yes. Well, you see, yoga is Hinduism. In fact, the very word yoga means to yoke with Brahman, that is considered to be the force, the energy force that sort of holds the world together, put the world into being, if you will.
Is that the serpent power then?
Well, yes, that is one of the representations, one of the symbols of this god, is that the serpent power within him, within this god concept, the serpent power is seen to be a very, very powerful power to connect to be able to tap into, an energy that we should all be able to tap into. And the belief is that this serpent power is laid coiled, sleeping, dormant at the base of each of our spines, and we have to awaken this power through yoga, through the positions of yoga, through the breathing techniques of yoga, through the visualization of yoga, through the disciplines of yoga, and lift this sleeping serpent up through each chakra, or each knot in our spine, if you will, to push it up, to eventually get up to the third eye, which is seen as this place in the middle of the forehead, which then immediately brings the practitioner into a euphoric state, a cosmic orgasm, a oneness with the universe, a oneness with this concept, this energy force that is called Brahman, and you yoke with this, and then you become one with God, and you and God are one. And this is the whole purpose of yoga, and that you have to be able to, if you can be disciplined enough and cunning enough and subtle enough in the discipline of yoga, then you can be at peace, you can bypass the wickedness of life. But actually, what it is it's a sort of self-induced altered state of consciousness to give you counterfeit impressions of peace, which is actually apathy. You learn tolerance. You do not stand up with a passionate discernment against evil. The more you practice yoga, the more dull you become, the more apathetic, in a way, which in Hinduism is seen to be tolerance, which is seen to be good. It's the blending of all gods and all religions and all realities as one. So it is so contrary to a biblical Christian concept where, first of all, God was so opposed to death and so vehemently antagonistic towards death that he wanted to give us life through his son Jesus Christ so that we could live with him through all eternity. So we don't have to go through any reincarnations. We don't have to bother with trying to exercise our way out of death, because in actual fact we've been given life through what Jesus has done for us on the cross. So there is no reason to get into any state that would in any way dupe or deceive us out of this incredible truth that Christianity offers.
But of course, this is exactly the opposite of what many Christians are being taught today. You want to have this experience. You want to, through contemplative prayer or by some other technique, put yourself into this state of mind where you can have this experience. And we've talked to a number of people who, of course, a bit into this, who've actually accepted these philosophies and, of course, been led into relationships with their spirit guides and then eventually demonically possessed. And at least those that we've talked to, many of them have come out of it at the far end. But why are they pushing this in so many of our churches today?
Well, it's being pushed in schools, in universities. I mean, we have got universities across the nation giving courses, giving, high schools, giving these degrees, PhDs in yoga studies in Harvard. You know, it's amazing what is happening. I think Harvard Department is one of about 50 or so in the United States that gives yogic studies at NYU or other, I think, Loyola Marymount University. They have these visiting professors that come in and teach yoga. Well, where do we get visiting evangelists or Christian apologists that are allowed to come into universities and teach about the biblical truths and concepts of Judeo-Christianity? Absolutely not. But we have Buddhists and Hindus and Chinese methods of meditation being taught and encouraged on campuses. And, as I mentioned at the opening of the program, very successful business people. I mean, we've got corporations, Fortune 500 companies, George Lucas's Industrial Light and Magic film company, the Viking Corporation, all these various corporations, the Paul Getty Museum, Ritz-Carlton Hotel, all of these offer their employees yoga practice. You know, yoga is said that it helps employees to be more productive, and therefore corporations are giving classes in it. We've got churches that are allowing stretching for Jesus with a yogic teacher on the altar. And the very fact that you say yoga, the word yoga, means to yoke with a pagan concept of God. So, you know, I've been asked by Christians, well, can a Christian just do Christian yoga, just stretching exercises? Well, then don't call it yoga. Why would I go into a Buddhist temple? Let's say I wanted to pray. Why would I go into a Buddhist temple to pray and say, well, I'm just going in there to pray? I wouldn't do that. If I wanted to pray to the God of the Bible, I wouldn't go into a pagan place to do it. So a Christian cannot do stretching exercises and call it yoga.
Well, of course, it really is not what you call it. It's really what you're doing. If you're doing stretching exercises, that's one thing. But if you're doing stretching exercises and specifically trying to put your mind into that neutral position where it has no thought at all, that's the difference. There's nothing wrong with stretching.
Oh, absolutely not. One can go for a walk. One can go for mountain hikes. But that's what it's called. Then you're hiking. You're walking. You're swimming. But when you say you're just doing yogic stretching exercises, that is not possible. It's an oxymoron.
But it's the mental things that gymnastics to go with that, and it's not really the mental gymnastics, it's the lack of gymnastics. It's the putting your mind in a neutral with no thought at all. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it's a spirituality. It's teaching a spirituality through physical exercise. And because we're in an era today where we all want to be fit, we're sitting at computers, we don't do enough walking, enough exercising. So, you know, one goes into the gym and you do this, and they say that if you sit and stretch and you empty your mind and focus into your inner being and stimulate your feminine side and all these sort of mystical things, it's a mystical language. They talk about it that they feel united, but it's mysticism, and the Bible calls this divination. What is being taught today is a sorcery and a divination.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, well, I would love to hear from you. Our guest is Carol Matrisianum. And, of course, Carol certainly is one of the most knowledgeable people about the occult because, of course, she actually was... You were into the New Age for many years, weren't you, Carol?
Well, this is what is so incredible. I was born and raised in India. I grew up surrounded by Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, Baha'i, Jains, many, many different religions in India. There is a compatibility that many of them were my school friends and we had friendships going, but I was very aware of Hinduism as a culture and a religion that I was fearful of. I mean, almost every day there were different types of Hindu feasts going on. I was born and raised in Calcutta, which is where the goddess Kali, the black goddess with this bloodthirsty tongue that hangs out of her mouth with her 29 heads of her husbands as a garland of a necklace around her neck. And these sort of things terrified me as a child. But what was so amazing is when I came back to the West, in the middle 60s, Hinduism had been so polished up and so cleaned up and so repackaged and so sanitized that I actually got involved in the very things that I was fearful of in India, what I grew up with in India, with a built-in fear. I came back to the West, and because the Beatles and Hollywood celebrities were pursuing Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and there was that wonderful blockbuster theater show called Hair on the stage, of the London stage and the New York stage, singing the accolades of yoga and altered states of consciousness. And I thought, well, maybe I just missed something growing up there. Maybe I totally misunderstood everything. So I got beguiled into the repackaged paganism, mysticism that was called the New Age, and became a westernized Hindu for many years as I spiraled downwards through drugs and very dark interest in yoga and the other side and spirit guides that just pulled me into a desire of suicide and depression and such darkness that there was no way, even though I wanted to get out of it, I just didn't have the power within me to do it until I was introduced to Jesus Christ some years later. And of course the Holy Spirit is the only one whose arm is not too short, who can expose darkness and pull us out of darkness through Jesus' blood into light and life. And that's what, you know, set me free.
Because, you know, this whole idea of the spirit guides, this is something that's really very, very prevalent in all of this, isn't it? As you get into this altered state of consciousness, you open yourself up and then you can contact your spirit guides?
Well, you hear voices, you see, and you believe the voices because, you see, as a Christian, I am truly led by the Word of God, and I can certainly hear God, but my hearing of God or my thoughts of God are always balanced with what is said in the Scriptures. So if I have a feeling, a deep feeling of being led in a particular way, my witness is the Scriptures and the Word of God. But when you start hearing voices that are your feelings, and your feelings can change depending on which voices are ruling, you start going into a sort of state of insanity. And in India, insanity is the state of godliness. So a complete madman, where these, by the time these yogis and there is a priesthood of mad, demented priests who are part of the tantric sadhus or priests, as they're called, who are completely insane. But because of their insanity, they're called gods of such massive, powerful godliness because they're insane.
What, do you think they're insane because they're demonically possessed?
Of course they are.
I think this is one form of insanity, that there really are people who you know, hear these voices and they take them over and they motivate them to do sometimes terrible deeds. I think
The
basis of some of our mass murders here in the United States.
But you see, even in a lesser way, we do that by, if we open up ourselves through astrology, palm reading, what seems to be very benign areas to go into the occult. I mean, we have got extremely high percentage and figures of teenagers being involved in the supernatural. I mean, you know, there was a recent, in fact, I've got it up on my webpage, a research that explores teenagers who openly say that, I think 4 out of 5 teenagers say that they've witnessed supernatural themes. And they communicate, 73% have engaged in at least one type of psychic or witchcraft activity. And we've got teenagers, more than one quarter of teens have played a game featuring sorcery or witchcraft. I think there's about 30% of teenagers through palm reading and psychic activities have become interested in witchcraft and had their psychic powers stimulated. I mean, it is incredible. 4 out of every 5 teenagers have had their horoscopes read. So all these things, while getting involved in this, what's happening is they open doorways into a world where they start hearing voices, and they think it's themselves. They think it's a thought that they're thinking. But the thought, because it's not balanced against Scripture, they've got no plumb line of truth. They've got no absolute truth. So they become confused. And, of course, Satan is the god of confusion, the god of doubt. And so before they know it, they become very confused, very doubtful, very chaotic. And those were some of the beginning features that I started feeling. And in order to try and take control of my life, I'd be involved in drugs or try to get a better eating pattern, become a vegetarian or whatever, you know, all the things I got into, trying to get control of this chaos, and ultimately it pulls you into a darkness and a hopelessness, because your mind is slowly being destroyed. It's all about feelings. If it feels right, then do it. But of course, you know, that isn't the answer.
Well, of course, the trouble is we're losing so many of our young people today, getting drawn into these this sense of hopelessness, and then of course looking for that spiritual experience. And it's there, but unfortunately, many times, it's not the experience of our Lord. It is these alternative, the labyrinth, the contemplative prayer, the yoga exercises, the breathing exercises, and, of course, for this fascination with the occult. Well, it's there, there's power there, but, of course, avoid it like the plague, because it'll do exactly to you what the plague does. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. We're just wrapping up this evening's program. Carol, when will you have the new video available, do you think?
Oh, well, I don't know. I'm very excited to get it done soon, but I don't think... I hope by before the end of the year. I hope by the summer. I'm really hoping on that. But meanwhile, I have speaking engagements, and I have all sorts of other things that tear my time away, and... it's a very exciting project, but my biggest concern is always to talk anywhere where I can help teenagers that have such mixed perspectives on supernatural beings. And while my movies work when I'm sleeping, but they never seem to come out quick enough.
Well, you know, what really was so frightening is so many young Christian children, you know, have seen the Harry Potter movies, have read the Harry Potter books, and a significant number of them have really become interested in witchcraft. Now, these are Christian kids. I can see children from non-Christian homes, but Christian children becoming fascinated with witchcraft because, of course, what they saw in the Harry Potter movies. And because our churches and our ministers were not speaking out against this sort of thing.
Well, Dr. Stan, I would encourage your listeners to go to my webpage, www.carryltv.com, and look at this new research that I've just posted last week about the Mosaic generation. That's the generation of 4-year-olds to 22-year-olds, and to see that millions of teens are precariously close to simply shelving the Christian faith, which they consider to be irrelevant, uninspiring, and they are so absorbed in the supernatural world and so sucked in. And my last 2-3 movies, I made one on Gods of Entertainment, showing that 32 million American children are being targeted for their $150 billion spending dollars, just so that the corporations, five mega corporations, control 95% of the media and want the $150 billion of our 32 million American children, and they will sell them anything through the media in order to trap them, have them watching them, buying their brands, whatever it is. So they don't care what they're giving our children. Our children are watching supernatural beings and stories and themes in America's entertainment choices.
We're going to have to interrupt because we're out of time. Carol, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
Thank
God you. Bless. Well, that was Carol Matriciana, and we have a real problem in America. We carry a number of Carol's videos, and you can go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, and we carry Gods of Entertainment, and we carry her Harry Potter videos. We think it's so important that people understand that our children's minds are under attack today. The people on the other side know exactly what's going on. There is a conspiracy against Christianity. There has always been a conspiracy against God. And the reason that they took God and prayer out of our schools and the Ten Commandments out is because they wanted the minds and hearts and souls of our children. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to get Carol's videos, Gods of Entertainment, the Harry Potter, the movies. You can go to our website and look at all the things. Or if you'd like to get one of our catalogs, we'll be glad to send it to you. If you'd like to get a newsletter from Radio Liberty, you need to get it. You need to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And the trouble is, most people don't even understand what this is about. Christianity is the enemy. It's not our freedom. Our freedom is a byproduct of Christianity. America was created by Christians. Yes, the occult was here, and there were agents from the other side, agents from the dark side who were working here from the very beginning. Today, they are in total control of our government. And you need to get the video. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And you need to understand how this battle has been fought. You need to get my video, The World Revolution. It will actually build upon a book written by the Librarian of Congress who tells you about the secret societies behind the World Revolution. James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, wonderful book, Fire in the Minds of Men. If you read President Bush's last inaugural address, January 20th, 2005, he talks about the fire in the minds of men. He was referring, of course, to this idea that James H. Billington has in his book, Fire in the Minds of Men. The idea comes from Dostoevsky's most famous book, The Possessed, about the world revolution. The world revolution is going on today, and it's being led by the United States, intent upon transforming all of the nations in the world and bringing them into a new world order and a new world religion. And don't for one minute be mistaken by our leaders who profess to be Christians, but look and see what they're doing. Would a Christian advocate torture of the of Muslim prisoners? Would a Christian allow the things that are going on throughout the world? Would a Christian lie to the American people about why we had to attack Iraq and then not fire anybody for giving them faulty information? Would a Christian allow people in government not to try to stop 911 and then not fire anybody when 3,000 Americans are dead, not even go through the guise of pretending that somebody made a mistake? Oh, no, nobody made a mistake. Everybody was congratulated for a fine job, well done. 3,000 Americans are dead, and nobody, well, except Zacharias Massui, nobody is ever punished for it. Maybe we ought to find out who is really responsible. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.